from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us on the G and Ursula Show. G is still under the weather today, so we've got Mike Lewis in. Good morning.
I am over the weather today, so I am good to go.
You and me both. Yesterday, I fessed up and I told everybody that I was not prepared for winter weather, that I would probably be scrambling, like I often do in the newsroom. I'd be scrambling to find all the flashlights in the house if we were to lose power for any significant amount of time. Well, I got home and my husband informed me of all the locations where our flashlights are, so I'm good. And then on his birthday, which was just Monday, he finally opened all his gifts.
Which is why I was here on Monday.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, it turns out my sister gave him one of those knit caps that has a light on it.
Right.
We are set.
At least you're set in terms of flashlights. You'll be able to see your way around the house.
Exactly.
Everything else is still in question.
I'm still working on that kit. We've got a packed show for you. And as always, we invite you to connect with us on our State Roofing text line, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO. Let's get right to it. Our top stories are brought to you by Economy Fence Center. And we are going to start off with the story about the controversial capital gains tax. The state Supreme Court has now given the green light to collect on it, even though the lawsuit over that tax will not come before the court until January. The legislature, as you know, passed that 7% tax on the sale and exchange of assets like stocks and bonds, and it only applies to profits over $250,000. Those who support it, like Treasurer Mackley with Invest in Washington Now, say it's an excise tax that'll affect just the wealthiest tier of people, and she points out that it's less than 1% of the population.
It does not apply to real estate, retirement accounts, pensions, or small business sales.
But Colin Hathaway with the Opportunity for All Coalition, that's one of the groups suing over the tax, well, he says it is an income tax.
So by calling it an excise tax, they're trying to get away from this whole idea of income tax, which voters have rejected.
And Mike, as you know, a state income tax is still illegal under Washington law. So the question I have for you, just to start.
I actually have to interrupt you for just a second. It's technically not illegal. Technically, it's not illegal.
Okay, I'm so glad you're here because you're going to unravel a whole bunch of stuff for us right now.
I am going to unravel a whole bunch of stuff yet. And I'm going to include my own personal Felix Bonnell moment.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. We're going to go into history now. But the question is, I just want to get this off the top. Do you believe this is an income tax and it should be stopped? Or do you agree with supporters who say it's one way to get the very rich to pay what they owe?
This is going to be not often do I say this is a super interesting story about taxes, right? I hesitate to say that, but this one actually is an interesting story about taxes. And it does come down to both sides are right. It comes down to terminology. What is an excise tax as opposed to what is an income tax? And it's largely based on the weirdness in Washington's constitution and tax code. Here we go. And here's my Felix Bonnell moment. Back in 1933... I love that. I've just been waiting to say that. Back in 1933, the Supreme Court ruled, did something that no other state in the country has done. Still remains like that. It classified income as property. Income is not classified as property at the federal level. It's not classified in other states as such. But that married it essentially to restrictions on property taxes. So you can only, property taxes are mandated at 1% annually, right? You can't, it's a flat tax. You cannot go higher than that. Well, because it's a non-graduated tax, because it's now married, at this point, it got married to property taxes and it's called property. That, so you can't actually pass an income tax in Washington state, but it has to be 1%. And that's 1% for everyone. Sort of like if you think of it as a flat tax. Now, the argument against flat taxes always has been it hurts people with lower income more because it's not graduated than it does people with higher income. That marriage is really what is in question here. Whether or not you can call income property. Are capital gains considered income? Absolutely. At every level, in most states at the federal level, if you sell a bunch of stock, that capital gains is considered income. If you sell a house, that capital gains is considered income. Anyone who sold a house has had to deal with this. But in Washington State. So what they wanted to do, there's been the struggle, the fight. You probably covered the fight over income tax in Washington State for most of your career. Everyone has. It comes up all the time. What the Democrats decided to do this time was to call it an excise tax. And there's actually pretty good legal foundation to do that. It is a one-time sale of an asset, which is very much like a sales tax. The business and occupations tax can be graduated. A sales tax can be graduated. And so if it is actually an excise tax, there's some arguments for and against that, then it's actually a legal tax. But capital gains are not classified in many places as an excise. They're classified as an income tax for very good reasons. This one is going to really come down to the definition of what these things are and whether or not this tax. And remember, most people who are listening right now are never going to pay this tax. One, it's more than $250,000. And two, they exempted, to make it more palatable, they exempted what most people realize as capital gains. And most people realize capital gains, if they realize any at all, in the form of sale of a house. That's exempt. So that is actually not going to be affected here if you sell your house.
And I'm so glad that you bring that up, because I think there are a lot of people who are reacting to it. It's like, well, it's just any tax, and it's essentially the start. And if we don't call it an income tax, it's the start, and it's just going to be something.
It's going to unspool from there.
Exactly. But you talked about some of the exemptions. And the other part of it is this is going to affect, like, really a small number of people.
Well, and here's the, again, like, it goes, this is one of those things, if you've ever seen one of those really great, you know, this is not one of those really great Netflix shows, right? Let me be clear on this point. But if you've ever seen one of those shows where you can't decide whether or not you like or dislike a character because the writing is really complex, this court case is one of those things, because to your point earlier, like, this is, could this decision, if the Supreme Court decides this is an excise tax, could it unwind a lot of restrictions on forms of income tax in Washington State? Maybe. I mean, maybe. There is some legal experts who say that original decision in 1933 was so flawed that it's needed to have been revisited forever anyway. There have been a couple of challenges. They haven't gone anywhere. This is actually, could this unspool in some way? Most of the time when we worry about that, it really doesn't happen. I'll give you that. Could this unspool in some unexpected way? Conceivably, because this then becomes a precedent-setting case if the Supreme Court decides it. What else could be rolled into excise tax? Does it mean that there's going to be a state income tax? Probably unlikely in the near term. Could it be in the far term? Remember, also, this summer, there was, what, 36 initiatives based on limiting this whole potential decision? None of them qualified for the ballot. What are people's appetites? What were people's appetites when the economy was booming? And one thing, what their appetite now when we're starting to see a slowdown in the economy is another thing entirely. So, and this was very specific. It was largely targeted at the tech community, because a big form of tech compensation, if you work in a tech company, is stock options,
right,
and stock sale, things like that. That it was targeting that income more than it was targeting anything else in Washington State.
So I'm going to force you to give an opinion, though, on this, whether you would be in support of this, or does this worry you that we're going down this slippery slope?
So I would say that I think it's fair to call this an end run around existing law. I would also say that Washington State is forever going to struggle with budget issues because it doesn't have any form of an income tax. A lot of other states do. And the idea that this income tax is going to somehow thwart development, I would give you California, which has had an income tax since the 1930s, and that's where Silicon Valley started, like, while there was an income tax. So the idea that this is going to thwart development or business expansion is mostly garbage. What's going to happen is a lot of people here are going to call their state of residence somewhere else and then not pay it, because there's all kinds of, like, things that cannot be untangled in this one. Like, did you sell the stock here? Did you sell the stock in Nevada? Did you sell the stock in New York?
Like, so is all this hysteria over what's going on right now a whole lot to do about nothing?
No, I mean, it could be something, but it's going to be something that affects a pretty small percentage of the population. And really, it is going to be challenged. I mean, we're not going to see this thing implemented, I think, for a couple of years, several years. Now, you're asking what I think about it?
Yeah.
I think it is probably fair to call it, it's a form of income, probably fair to call it an income tax. The states, I don't mind the idea of an income tax. Everyone in Washington State has kind of gotten used to not having one. when I was hired at the Post Intelligencer in 2000, part of the pitch was that while we're not going to really give you much of a raise, it's newspapers after all, we're not going to give you much of a raise. You are technically getting a raise because we don't have an income tax here. And California did. And big employers use that pitch all the time that you don't have to pay income tax in this state. So I think I'd generally be comfortable with this thing getting through. But I also don't have, you know, should I win the lottery or should I get a whole bunch? Yeah. Of course, I'm going to be unhappy.
You don't have that kind of skin in the game.
Exactly.
Okay, this is a story that we've been following, and hundreds of people gathered last night to remember and pay tribute to those four University of Idaho students who were stabbed to death in their home.
Zanna Kernodal. Ethan Chapin. Kaylee Gonzalez. Madison Logan.
This morning, authorities are now backing away from an earlier statement that they made about the victims being targeted.
At a vigil, Stacy Chapin, whose son Ethan was one of the four victims at the University of Colorado, said it's a reminder key moments with loved ones are important.
Make sure that you spend as much time as possible with those people because time is precious and it's something you can't get back.
Police now say they no longer think one or all of the students was targeted in the home where they were killed, and it's unclear how long the investigation will take. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
I got to say, hearing that latest development just was even more heartbreaking because that was the one little thing in the investigation that felt like, okay, they're on to something.
Right, right. It felt like that to me as well. This is, let's setting aside for a moment the tragedy. This was an abysmal job by law enforcement from a messaging and handling standpoint. I think that the local police created enormous problems with the way this was handled initially saying crime of passion. Remember that came out. It turns out none of that actually was, and people were wondering,
that wasn't the police though. That was like a lawmaker. That was, you know, just a lot of people were weighing in
on it.
Right. And then the messaging got out of hand,
but they were weighing in based on what the police were saying, and they were referring to targeted, and they were referring to, they used a lot of language that it turns out they didn't have the information to actually use. This one is like, I think that it's gotten over time when we start getting an explanation in situations like this, they get a little bit less, they stay just as tragic, but they get a little more knowable and a little less concerning. This one's gotten more so over time, not less so.
Well, and so now I think there are maybe up to half of the students in that on that campus who have decided they're just going to continue the semester remotely.
Right.
It would be very unsettling. That's not a big community. I mean, it's a pretty tight knit community. There's not a whole lot of people.
Right.
And for me, you know, to be fair to this police department, they hadn't investigated a murder in years, and then much less a case like this where you've got four, and as we hear four people who were killed, and as we hear the details about what happened in those earlier moments about the surviving roommates coming out and then medics going in and not knowing what scene they had and then how that might have tainted some of the evidence, I'm just praying that the investigation hasn't been, you know, so severely hampered by all that.
Oh, absolutely. And on top of that, it is difficult for small law enforcement. We've never dealt with it. I mean, they don't really sometimes have a plan in place for this. But that's also why you have help at a state level.
Yes.
You
have other FBI's in.
And the FBI is now in.
Yes.
And that is hopefully going to at least put some stability to the investigation and figure out what we know and what we don't know and what the information that they've gathered, where that can lead the investigation. And I hope that bringing the FBI in and bringing other law enforcement experts maybe will get the ship correct, and then suddenly we'll be able to get to a place where we know what actually happened.
Yes, for sure. Imagine how it would feel to lose your job just 2 days before Christmas. Actually, that is going to be reality for some employees in Amazon's Human Resources Department, of all places. They're going to be working their last day on December 23rd. It is part of the company's plan to shrink its corporate workforce by 3% in coming months. And as we've been reporting, Amazon started handing out pink slips this month, and the number of layoffs could reach about 10,000 This could affect 10,000 workers by the time they're all through in the end of 2023. And the Seattle Times reports it's still not clear how many people the company is going to be trimming from each division, or how these layoffs will affect the Puget Sound headquarters.
I understand layoffs happen, and I understand Amazon's hiring expansion is almost unprecedented in U.S. history. The amount of people, Amazon, everyone who's seen has dealt with traffic and construction in downtown Seattle, who's dealt with high rents, who's dealt with all of these. This is an outgrowth of one of the most aggressive corporate hiring campaigns that's ever existed in this country. And now it is recalibrating, as they're saying. They're re-leveling. Some of this is, if you think about it in the abstract, it makes some sense. If you think about it personally, and it's your job, it obviously is troubling. But the thing that I don't understand is, if they knew this was coming, and they knew this was coming, why now? Like, why at this particular moment? Why not just push it out a month? And I understand there's a cost associated with that. And also, why on earth would you take away human resources who have to deal with all of this stuff on the way out? Why make that department smaller, at least initially, while you're going through this process?
Yeah, I would understand it if this were Twitter, but Amazon?
I might have an explanation for you. Vox reported this week on a leaked Amazon memo, an internal memo that says a lot of the HR layoffs are happening because Amazon has developed its own recruiting AI software, so they no longer need those individuals. As to the timing of it, I believe that would be the stock market, because if you want to go into Q1 with all those people still on your payroll, it doesn't look very good, so you got to close that out before the end of the month.
But doesn't it just look bad PR-wise 2 days before Christmas? I mean,
is
really
anyone going to buy anything less?
Yeah. Good point. But it always brings to mind, it's like, who has the worst layoffs? I'm still going to say radio industry.
Oh. As been a person who's been laid off from a journalism job at a very, very bad time for that to happen.
We're the worst.
We're the worst. Absolutely. The worst.
Exactly. Right. And I've never understood it. I never will.
Right.
And is one of the reasons why I said, I've got to just hop off this management train. I can't deal with this.
Right. I don't blame you.
Yeah. I just remember taking someone home after I had to lay him off. It was with his box. I
had to lay someone off when I was a supervisor at AOL for a news website at a Panera Bread, which was no fun at all. Not for the Panera employees.
You cannot
not
go,
for me.
You cannot
not
go
for
in
this
there
person.
Without thinking about
no,
it.
No, I've
right?
never
yes.
been back in one as a result of this.
I know. Okay, still ahead, we are going to talk to Cairo Radio's resident meteorologist, Ted Beener. He's been doing a great job keeping us all up to date on the snow. Are we done yet? This is the Gian Ursula Show with Mike Lewis. To the G and Ursula Show. G is off today. Mike Lewis is in. Just got a text message from my good friend Tracy, who sent me some pictures of all the snow that they are still getting in Issaquah. She is on Squawk Mountain. I know that there are neighborhoods that are still getting some snow. Mike, you and I live here in the lower lowlands.
Yes, lower lowlands. We've had a little bit of slight icy road. Yeah. Nothing more than that.
Yeah, exactly. But we are joined now by Cairo Radio's meteorologist, Ted Beener, who's been keeping us abreast of everything going on with the weather. Good morning.
Good morning. Keep this up. I'm going to be a co-host.
Exactly. So what are we dealing with now? What did round two bring us?
Well, this time it was basically from King County southward that had the opportunity to get some snow overnight into this morning. Like you said, right in the immediate Seattle area, hardly anything. But if you go east and south, they got a few inches. And if you head up towards North Bend or heading up I-90, oh, my goodness, they've got over a foot of snow on the ground at this moment. And the folks down on the south end, well, they've got somewhere in the vicinity of 1 to 3 or 4 inches of snow. And boy, we froze up overnight last night, and I know Sully and now Mickey are still reporting all kinds of crashes.
Yes.
Because of the slick conditions. Temperatures right now are right around freezing, and even if we get above freezing here a little later today, That just means that snow melts and it's got water on top of ice. Ugh, it's just going to be a mess.
I've never been in a place where I think that the meteorologists are driven more insane than this area, because when you talk about even certain weather conditions, we're talking about sometimes four block areas, right? I mean, it changes so rapidly based on what neighborhood you're in, what city, what blocks you're in within a neighborhood than other places. I mean, how do you, from a forecasting standpoint, is this the type of like sort of the worst case scenario for people who actually study this, because it varies so widely depending on small changes in geography?
Oh, you're absolutely right, Mike. I've talked about it for years. Our weather around here is terrain-driven. I'm still lucky I still have hair. If I haven't pulled it out, it's all of it out at this point. But, you know, no, you're absolutely right. The, you know, on Tuesday, it was the north end that got the bulk of the snow, because we had that nice little moderate south wind that kind of warmed things up, and it turned the snow to rain pretty early in the event. But it kept snowing up in Snohomish County on up into Skagit County and over towards Kitsap County. And now, here we are overnight last night and this morning, and the action's been in the south end. So, again, our topography plays such a key role in who gets what and where and when. And we're going to end up with another scenario like this heading into tomorrow and tomorrow night.
Okay, so when you say another scenario like this, it's hit and miss, or it is going to be what areas should be especially a concern right now?
That's a good question. The way this thing is tracking, if you looked on satellite imagery, for those who want to tune in on that right now, you can see the next system kind of diving southeast from the northeast part of the Gulf of Alaska. So it's going to spread more moisture over top of this cold air. By the way, tonight's lows, we're going to be in the upper teens and 20s, because we're going to clear out a little bit this afternoon, and tonight, with all the snow on the ground, we're just going to get really chilly. So this moisture is going to spread over that during the day tomorrow. Most of it's going to turn to rain out on the coast because we've got some winds coming in off the ocean. But here in the interior, that's another good question. So who's going to get how much and when? Probably in the evening and overnight hours, probably just a few inches here and there. And some places, like in the south end again, like South Sound, kind of a repeat of Tuesday, where things might moderate enough that snow turns over to rain. But with the existing snow on the roads, et cetera, right now, particularly in the neighborhoods and the side streets, just makes it into a messy situation. Now, some good news over the weekend. This system will track offshore heading south towards Oregon and California.
Good.
And we're going to taper it off by Saturday morning, but it's still going to remain pretty chilly all the way through the weekend.
Okay, chilly, but the threat of snow ends sometime Saturday.
That's correct. Probably Saturday morning.
Okay,
that'll
good.
Be the good news, but we're not out of it yet. We're heading into next week.
Oh, no.
And I realize my situation isn't the same as many other people. I have a truck that actually gets through the snow reasonably well, and I don't drive far. When I come down here, my other gig, but I don't consider it a threat of snow. I look forward to it. Every year I look forward, and I know that that's not a popular opinion, maybe among some, but this is one of the few areas where adults get snow days. Now, what has been crushed by this, honestly, is this whole business of remote work, because before you would just take that day would be a day off, but now there's this expectation that you're still engaged with work when you're at home. That has been the great tragedy of remote work, that we don't get snow days anymore as adults.
No, you're absolutely right. And that includes all of us, doesn't it?
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. And I want to say, speak for yourself, because when the snow would hit for us, at least in radio, it's like you're going to find a way to get your butt in here.
Because you have twice as much work to do.
Yes, exactly.
In much more dangerous conditions.
Exactly.
It never gets better for us. It just gets worse.
So I apologize for my feeling of dread when
Understood.
I hear the word snow. And I also still remember the time when I was forced to stay in a hotel, in a very cold hotel downtown, where it was that year when, remember, we were talking about it yesterday.
Loved it. Loved
you
that
loved
year.
It with
loved
that it. Year when the cars
loved
were stuck
it.
On the freeway. Yeah,
okay,
no.
I didn't love that, and I didn't love anything bad that came up. But I personally like watching the town be quiet and everyone walking around, and sometimes on cross country skis. I kind of dug it.
Ted, we appreciate you. I think we're going to be talking to you again very soon,
right,
and I look forward to the day we start talking about highs in the 70s again.
I think I mentioned this yesterday. It was only a matter of 5-6 weeks ago, we were 88
yes.
degrees.
I
That's
know.
Hard
Glorious.
To imagine, isn't it?
Yes, it is hard to imagine. Thank you, Ted Beener, our Kyra Radio meteorologist. I love being able to say that. Thank you so much. Okay, hey, just a reminder to all of you. We would love it if you would join us and Carter Subaru and Treehouse for our 34th year of holiday magic. We want to help provide holiday gifts and year-long support for children and youth in foster care statewide. All you need to do is text the word MAGIC to 888-973-5476, or you can go to mynorthwest.com/holidaymagic to learn more. And you also want to make sure that you listen to all of our shows next week to hear how Treehouse is helping these young people throughout the year. And you are going to be inspired. We're also going to be kicking off our inaugural Holiday Magic online auction. Lots of great things to auction off. And we're going to have some fun guests. So stay tuned. But again, text the word magic right now if you want to be part of this wonderful effort. More of the G and Ursula Show coming up next. Stay with us. Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Thank you so much, Nick, for this beautiful bump.
Absolutely.
As we remember Christine McVie, who passed away yesterday at the age of 79. And we're going to actually talk about Fleetwood Mac, Christine McVie. But I want to have a conversation with all of you at 11:30 about the album that has made that big difference in your life, if you have one. One of us on this show does not have one, but we're going to talk about that 11:30. And I want to hear from all of you listening right now. What is that one, whether you were listening to records like we were, Mike,
exactly.
in the day back in the 70s, the actual records, or what was it that really spoke to you and why?
I think that's going to be a fun talk.
Yes, for sure. But right now we need to talk about sleep. Do you need a dedicated device to monitor how well you sleep? Amazon is entering the marketplace with the Halo Rise. This is a $140 ring-shaped alarm clock that will also track your sleep quality. So if you have one of those ring lights, it looks like one of those that, you know, we all kind of got into during the pandemic to make us look especially good. Okay, yeah, that thing. So it has built-in motion sensors. They study your nighttime movements and your breathing patterns. And you can see on the app how well you slept, when your deepest sleep cycles occurred, and you will get a sleep rating for the night ranging from poor to great. So my question to all of you would be, would that something be something that you would be interested in? Do you think it would be something that would be worthwhile?
I think that my answer would be in two parts. I think that the whole evolution of understanding that quality sleep matters from a lot of health outcomes is actually fairly important. I mean, anyone who's dealt with, you know, a family member or in their own family history, folks with cognitive decline, there's a variety of things that stem from that. Obesity, that all of this stems from really poor, much of it stems from poor sleep, and poor sleep is a contributing factor. So in that respect, broadly speaking, I'd be interested. The specifics of the technology are still not, for me, fully baked. A lot of it, what's happening here, is because it became like the latest thing, as the way the Mediterranean diet was one, like now it and other health outcomes became very popular, and Amazon and all these other companies know full well what the search terms are, what people are looking yes. for, and then they build a product accordingly. And so the Halo is an outgrowth of Amazon seeing in its own massive database what people are searching for to try and get some sort of handle on how can I improve, how can I actually improve something that I'm going to have to do a third of the day anyway, as opposed to, say, exercise or something like that.
Yeah.
So it makes sense. I'm not sure this does a whole lot of good.
I think it's brilliant. And I want to tell you why, because I think there are a lot of people who don't realize that they have sleeping conditions, including sleep apnea. And I've never shared this. I actually found out about not quite a year ago that I have sleep apnea.
Right.
It's considered mild to moderate. But how I found out, I was going to have a surgery and did not end up having the surgery, but I was going to have it. And I actually had a sleep study done on me, and I was able to do it. I've had sleep. I have horrible sleep.
Right.
And I had a sleep study done where, you know, you're wired up, you have to stay the night in a hospital or a medical clinic, and you get the worst sleep. So right. If they're going to be monitoring your sleep, you know, you're so uncomfortable.
Worst case scenario.
Yes. Right. It's going to for sure find
right.
something.
Right.
But I was able to do this sleep study this time from home with my cell phone
right.
and a little thing that I put on my finger
right.
that was able to detect the, you know, and I'm sure it's not as accurate.
I've got an Apple Watch does that. You can set it to do the same thing.
Yes. Right. I mean, I think that frankly is brilliant. Now, I think most of us know when we have bad sleep. Like last night,
right.
I had bad sleep.
Right.
You know, I was sharing that my adult son came into, you know, came home, and we had a conversation that made my eyes pop open
right.
really wide. So that kind of ruined my sleep for the night. But I think that there's sleep is one of those things that affects bad sleep.
Completely.
Affects millions and millions of people and does have a wide range of effects.
I completely agree that sleep tech is important, and it's a great way for a lot of people to learn if they have a condition. At the same time, the route that you arrived to that was not through a device sold by Amazon or Apple. It was through your doctor. And I don't believe that they market any of these devices as being diagnostic. Like, hey, this device is going to tell you if you have sleep apnea. It will tell you, however, hey, you had a poor night of sleep. Thank you. I knew that. Are you trying to shame me for my own sleep now? I think the whole category of smart home tech is generally pretty dumb. I don't need 7 different devices in my home to do things like monitor my sleep. And no, just buy the device and then we'll tell you why you need it. I don't need a readout of whether I slept well. In the research on these devices and how effective they are at measuring your sleep patterns and whether you slept well is pretty bad. Compared to commercial technology, most of the smart home tech when it comes to sleep doesn't do very well. I don't know. This seems like a gimmick to me.
Yeah, it probably is.
Isn't Alexa already an alarm clock?
Could you argue that an Apple Watch is a gimmick? I mean, can you? So many things we did without.
Right.
But there are these things that, hey, now they're available. They've figured out the technology. If you can figure out just how bad your sleep is, or the reason you like the Apple Watch, or you know, people have their Fitbits. You know exactly what you're doing, maybe where you have a deficit, maybe where you can improve.
Well, but also there is this thing, and it even talks about in this one writer's review of this, that there's this whole trend of great inflation. So in other words, it will tell you, hey, good sleep on a night where potentially you didn't actually get good sleep. No different than like taking X number of steps a day, which is
right.
maybe not even medically significant. They give you like this pat on the back. And I guess maybe getting kudos more regularly if you're not getting them from people in your life. Fair enough. But I don't know that I need another device.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the restaurant or supermarket receipt that says thank you on it. Like, do I really need that?
And it's literally watching you while you sleep.
Right.
Okay, that part I don't worry about. Like, are you a good sleeper, Mike?
On occasion, yes, but it frequently not. And so I actually agree with the whole idea of trying to improve the quality of sleep. I'm just not sure these devices are a pathway for everyone.
Still ahead, what's new at 10? This is the Gene Ursula Show.